Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehr Show, former Senator Olympia Snowe on the immigration compromise announced today in the Senate and on her new push to fix our polarized political system. We air results from our crowdsourcing project today in which you submitted the cost of your mammograms and how much your insurance companies negotiated a lower rate. We conclude our series with New York Times Obits editor Bill McDonald and a new survey on the state of adult friendships in America today, including the question, what's the most extreme thing you've ever done for a friend or asked a friend to do for you? All coming up in just a minute, beginning with Olympia Snowe. I do want to mention that this is the last day of our spring membership drive. Hooray. And I want to thank everybody who's pledged throughout the drive and anybody who's pledged earlier in the year or is a sustaining member of WNYC. And to wrap up the drive, I've just been given word of a 2-for-1 matching period that begins right now. A donor to WNYC is offering $2 for every $1 that you pledge. So hopefully this is going to be a great incentive for you to stop procrastinating on this last day of the drive and get something in for us. If you pledge $100, this donor will give us an extra $200. So basically we're tripling your money. So if you want to support WNYC, if you haven't renewed yet in 2013, if you've been a member in the past, or if you've been listening for a while now and want to join us for the first time, this is such a great opportunity to help the station pay the bills and grow more innovative programming by donating something to WNYC right now for the end of our spring membership drive. And beginning right now, this will be tripled. One of our deeper pocketed donors is offering for this last morning of the drive twice whatever you pledge to WNYC. So please do it right now. 1-888-376-WNYC is the number to call. 1-888-376-9692. Or you can pledge online at WNYC.org. Thank you all so much for your support for the station. And right now, I didn't know this was coming, a 2-for-1 match to wrap it up. So help us take advantage of that listener's generosity with a little bit of yours. Thank you again. So we have a very interesting confluence of news and a special guest to begin today. The Senate Judiciary Committee, in a rare act of big-ticket compromise, has passed a comprehensive immigration reform bill. It now goes to the full Senate. Our guest is former U.S. Senator Olympia Snowe, who just left the Senate this year after three terms as a Republican from Maine out of frustration with gridlock and partisan polarization. Her new book is called Fighting for Common Ground: How We Can Fix the Stalemate in Congress. So we'll talk about today's news and the bigger picture, including her proposals for change. Senator Snowe, it's an honor. Welcome to WNYC.
I'm delighted to be here this morning, so thank you, Brian, for having me.
And folks, here's what we'll do. I'll interview Senator Snowe for the first half of our time, and then let's have a town hall call-in with Senator and your calls on how to fix our broken, polarizing system. So think about it and start posting to our webpage. We'll put out the phone number in a little while so you don't just sit on hold for too long. But if you want to go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehr Show right now, you can start posting your most central ideas for how to fix our broken national political system. WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show to post, and we'll open it up for phone calls in a little while. Senator, what do you think about this immigration bill and the process that has gotten this compromise this far?
Well, I think it's an important first step. It's an indication when both sides have mutual interest in addressing an issue that they can come together. So I think that the process that was underway and resulted in the passage in the Senate Judiciary Committee of this bipartisan immigration reform is, you know, a great step forward, and also is indicative of the way the process used to work. And regrettably, it hasn't, obviously, in the past, and so many critical issues that are still pending that need to be addressed.
It seems like the final compromises to get this out of committee came from the Democratic side. Here's Senator Schumer on agreeing not to push a provision that would have allowed gay spouses legally married in other countries to enter the U.S. under the spousal immigration privilege. Spouses get entry more easily. Senator Schumer.
Much as it pains me, I cannot support this amendment if it will bring down the bill.
So, Senator Snow, will you comment on that provision or the difficult compromise of getting to that, which was the most painful thing that the Democrats had to endure?
Yes. I mean, I think it is illustrative of the give and take in a process when you're trying to achieve solutions on a consequential issues like immigration reform that's contentious at the outset because it cuts across so many lines, whether it's labor, economic interests, business interests, family interests. I mean, it just has so many different facets to the question. And so you have to make those tough decisions, as Senator Schumer indicated, that where you have to concede on certain points and understanding that you're going to advance the overall legislation. And that is part of, I think, compromise, is that you have to understand what the other side needs and what you require in the legislation, where you draw your boundaries and where you can, you know, demonstrate some flexibility because of the overall greater good that will result with the passage of the comprehensive package. And I think that's an example in this instance of what Senator Schumer was describing.
Former Senator Olympia Snowe with us. If your crusade is for common ground, is there really such a thing in politics? I mean, I could argue that the immigration bill got this far not out of any spirit of seeking common ground, but because the political interests of both sides happened to align. Republicans decided they needed to woo Latino voters, given their growing numbers in the national electorate, and Democratic voters tend to be Hispanics and others who support this idea traditionally. So this isn't common ground or compromise in a high-minded sense as much as mutual self-interest, I could argue. Do you think?
Yes. No. I mean, I think that is the reality, is that what drove this issue in the final analysis. Obviously, from the Republican perspective, it was clear that they had lost the Hispanic vote in the last election with historic proportions, frankly. And you can't ever hope to become a majority party and losing minority population support to the degree that Republicans did in the last election. And obviously, it's also a compelling issue on the Democratic side. So, yes, you're right. Those political forces did align to drive this issue. And that's, the sad commentary when you think about all of the issues that have been neglected and overlooked over the last few years that, imperils the prosperity of this country and Americans, given the looming debt and the deficits. And in a few short years, we will have, we'll certainly are in charted waters now with the level of debt as a percentage of gross domestic product, and that will continue to be the case in the foreseeable future, given the impact of the cost, both on the spending side and also on the entitlement side of the equation that has to be explored and should be done so in the short term, because there's very few years remaining before we're going to feel the real impact of 77 million beneficiaries that will be on programs such as Medicare and Social Security over the next 20 years.
But when you title your book Fighting for Common Ground, and you leave the Senate because you're sick of the polarization, it sounds like you're looking for something more than those moments like this immigration bill where mutual self-interest allows senators from the two parties to come together. Yes?
Yes. My philosophy, about public service is that in the final analysis, our obligation and responsibility is to solve the problems that are either facing our constituencies and or the country in the United States Senate. That should be the overriding driving force. As you well know, what's transpired in Congress in recent years is that many of these issues have languished and been set aside out of political interest, not willing to tackle the tough questions, make the tough decisions because of the political impact, the fear that it would, create political reprisals. So as a result, all of these issues have languished, and neither side has been willing to work together to do what's right. I mean, if you think about the debt ceiling or the fiscal cliff or the automatic cuts, or the super committee that emanated from the debt ceiling agreement that failed, and then, of course, that produced the automatic cuts that, you know, we had to reach a New Year's Day agreement on, and then, of course, they were triggered in February, that didn't prompt any action on Congress to avert those cuts and come up with alternative savings and at least work through a process to determine which programs work and didn't work. So, yes, you're right. It's not motivated by the essence of what we're there for and what we're responsible for to our constituencies and to the country, and to do the right thing at the right time for the right reasons.
Also in the news right now, as you know, is this whole IRS tax-exempt status controversy. And I noticed in the book that I guess I would say you have a unique relationship to that, because it was your amendment to the McCain-Feingold campaign finance law that got overturned in Citizens United, leading to the scramble by Tea Party and other political groups to get into the campaign spending business more deeply. So can you talk about the provision of the law that you sponsored and how you felt about Citizens United?
Yes. In fact, in the process of developing the McCain-Feingold legislation, which was, you know, a multi-year endeavor,
And bipartisan, McCain as a Republican, Feingold as a Democratic senator.
Exactly. And because in campaign finance reform, you have to have both sides invested in the issue so that it's a level playing field, that neither side gets an advantage over the other, or one side's disadvantage compared to the other side. So it has to be even-handed, and that's what we did. And I inserted a provision that I had worked on for a very long time, had many iterations along with Senator Jeffers. It was called the Snowe-Jeffers provision. And we decided, given the impact of these outside organizations and the ads that they were running during the course of the campaign, and that ostensibly were designed to influence the outcome of an election because they would run shortly before an election, identify lawmakers by name, that we should draw a bright line, and that when they would run these ads 60 days before an election, and if they identified the lawmaker by name, saying, tell Senator Snow that she needs to vote X, Y, and Z, then that would constitute a political ad, and that they would have to live by the restrictions, the campaign restrictions, similar to political action committees.
Including, including disclosing who paid for that campaign season ad.
You've got it. That's exactly right. And so there's the same transparency and the same restrictions on the amount of money that could be contributed to that committee.
And Citizens United threw that out.
Yes. And actually, it was sustained. It was challenged on another occasion. And it was, in fact, it was debated in the oral arguments. It required 3 hours to, you know, examine this issue before the Supreme Court. In the oral arguments, and it was sustained because at that time we were fortunate to have Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. But then in the second challenge, obviously, we didn't have the same composition on the court, and
so
it led
to
Citizens United.
So to the point of your book, how central do you think these unlimited, anonymously funded advocacy group commercials during election campaigns are to the essential polarization that you're trying to fight?
Oh, I think that they are a major factor in perpetuating the status quo and enhancing the political divide and the polarization that exists in America today. Absolutely. I mean, it's in their vested interest to continue this machinery, you know, because they're well-funded, they're well-organized, and they want to perpetuate the status quo in the forces of division. And that's what we have, unfortunately, today. And they fill the airways with invectives. If you think about the amounts of money that was spent in the last campaign, the last election, I think it was about $500 million at the minimum, compared to 20 years ago where there was only about $7 million that was spent by these organizations. And now it's like it was over $500 billion. $500 million. So, and it could be far more. It could have been closer to $1 billion if you consider everything that was expended in the campaign. So that is dramatic. And 71% of those ads are attacking candidates, not supporting them. So that has a spillover effect in the legislative process, and it ultimately continues to fuel the permanency of the campaign. And so there's no line of demarcation between the election and the beginning of a new Congress and laying out a legislative agenda. It just continues on as if we were still into the campaign season.
Listeners, my guest is former Senator Olympia Snowe, who just left the Senate at the end of last year, decided not to run for a fourth term, fed up with polarization in Congress, and she's launching a campaign against that, including with her new book, Fighting for Common Ground, How We Can Fix the Stalemate of Congress. So we're going to take a break, and then we're going to start to include your calls and the questions on the table for you. We'll have kind of a town hall with Senator Snowe on the question, how do we end polarization in America, and should that be the goal? Call us and talk about it with former Senator Olympia Snowe, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Just by way of grounding, before we go to the break, some of her proposals from the book, which does end with a very specific list of proposals, restrict the filibuster, allow more amendments on the Senate floor, make Congress work 5 days a week, revisit so-called independent campaign commercials, as we were just talking about, let anybody vote in both parties' primaries, abolish so-called leadership PACs or political action committees that come from the leadership of the parties, and establish independent redistricting commissions to loosen the grip of so many safe seats. So those are some of Olympia Snowe's suggestions. How about yours, or react to those? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Senator Snowe, we're going to take this break, and then we'll continue. And I could see the phone lines lighting up, so this should be really interesting.
That's great.
And thank you for inspiring it. And we'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer and WNYC, and if you're just joining us, we continue with our very special guest, former three-term Senator Olympia Snowe, the moderate Republican from Maine who just left the Senate at the end of last year, fed up with the polarization. She did not run for re-election, and she now has a new book that represents the new campaign that she's on, and the book is called Fighting for Common Ground, How We Can Fix the Stalemate in Congress. And we're going to go to your calls. We invited people just before that break to call up and talk about your ideas for fixing our broken political system. And just to review some of the proposals that Senator Snowe concludes her book with, we mentioned them before the break, restrict the filibuster, allow more amendments on the Senate floor, make Congress work 5 days a week, revisit so-called independent campaign commercials, let anybody vote in both parties' primaries, abolish so-called leadership PACs or political action committees from the party leaderships, and establish independent redistricting commissions to loosen the grip of so many safe seats. So while we're getting the calls lined up, Senator, do you want to go down this list just a little bit, maybe pick out two of those and tell us why you think they would help to fix things?
Well, I think it is important to have solutions, and I also should mention, Brian, I'm now with the Bipartisan Policy Center, and we have established a Common Ground project in conjunction with the release of my book that would help to create a citizens' movement to mobilize support for bipartisanship and consensus building. So I urge people to go to their website, bipartisanpolicy.org, because it's a whole new avenue for people not only to communicate, but also what they can do hands-on in real time to influence the process and, you know, demanding that lawmakers engage in bipartisan solutions. So the book is, you know, one set of recommendations, and then it's also to implement it through specific concrete products, projects as well.
So let me throw one of yours at you. Let anybody vote in both parties' primaries. How would it help democracy for Chuck Schumer to vote in a Republican primary or Marco Rubio to vote in a Democratic one?
Well, the various examples of different open primaries, you know, semi-open primaries. Some have full, you know, as you saw in California, where they have two from the same party in running against each other in a general election after the primary because they're the two highest vote getters. You know, in Maine, if you're an independent, you just have to register in the party in order to vote in that primary. That's a different way of doing it. It's to encourage more people to get involved in these primaries, such as independents, which helps to, I think, reduce the number of candidates that are on either the far left or the far right, frankly. And as a result of some of the, you know, as we've seen in the recent elections, you're having people representing much more narrow constituencies. And ultimately, that is reflected in the legislative process, where we're focusing on much narrower positions tailored to that primary base as opposed to the broader population. And that's why open primaries, which can be changed by state legislatures, becomes critical, because that way you're having an invitation to more people to voting in those primaries rather than just those from, you know, the extreme ends of the political spectrum.
Let's take a call and see what people are proposing. And Linda in Port Jefferson, you're on WNYC. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning. In January, I had an opportunity to attend a beautifully run conference by an organization called No Labels, and their whole goal is to stop the gridlock in Washington and to promote compromise. And they had people at this conference from both parties, and it was so well run. But their goal, two of their main platforms, is that they should be working, Congress and people in the Congress should be working a 5-day work week, and with 3 weeks in a row, and then taking off the fourth week so that they can get back out to their constituents. And the other thing is that nobody in either the House or the Senate should take should get paid if the budget is not paid and is not passed. And those are they have other ones too, other platforms, but those were the two mainstays. And the two chairpiece people are John Huntsman and Joe Manchin, and they're the ones that are really heading up this organization.
Sure. And Linda, I'm gonna move on. And yes, John Huntsman, who came on the show just recently to talk about it, who is of course the Republican presidential hopeful from Utah, considered a moderate. Joe Manchin, a moderate Democrat from West Virginia, and they Senator Snow, I believe, attempted to run a third party presidential candidate last year. They actually got ballot access in all 50 states, and they never did find a viable candidate, so they shut down the campaign. I had heard that you were approached, and people were saying, oh, Olympia Snow could run as this centrist third-party candidate. Were you approached, and did you consider it?
Well, yes, that was American Elect. No Labels.
Yes.
And yes, I had been. But obviously, you know, I still remain a Republican. And so
would a third party in general be helpful or just bog things down, in your opinion, toward your goal?
Yeah, I think that it essentially been a two-party system, and that's the way it's worked. But, you know, the two political parties, the way they're running the governing institutions, they do so at their peril, because it does invite, third parties in alternative ways. And that's something that they have to recognize. When both political parties have the obligation and responsibility to make sure that our political institutions are addressing the problems facing this country. And when they're not, then people, sure, are deeply frustrated and rightfully angry about that failure and neglecting the overall issues that are so critical to this country. And, yes, they may decide at some point. But hopefully both parties will, come to terms with this political dysfunction and decide to tackle the issues. And time is of the essence, given the enormity of the problems that we are facing. Now, No Labels, yes, is another organization that, I cite in my book.
Yes.
I like the 3 weeks and the 1 week. We do have to have a concentrated work week in the United States Congress because, frankly, you can't do it in 2.5 days a week, given the complicated issues, given the time they require in terms of thought and deliberation that would compel both sides to work together and sort through these very difficult issues.
And what is this five-day work with? What is the problem? Is it that this is a bunch of slackers in Congress living large on the taxpayers' dime, or is it that they have to spend so much time fundraising in our contemporary system that that's why they're only in Washington that much?
Yes, well, you know what happens. If we don't have scheduled votes, then obviously they're either spending time back in their districts or their states, or yes, they're doing fundraising or whatever else there is. But I think it is essential that you have a concentrated legislative work week that includes votes 5 days a week in order to accomplish the major issues facing this country.
Right.
I mean, for example, debt reduction or tax reform and all of these issues that really I think it is so important to the future of this country that you have to have the entire Congress working there. And the only way you can compel them to be there is by requiring votes scheduling votes.
Go to another call. Robert in Manhattanville. You're on WNYC. Hello, Robert.
Hi, Brian. You know, these are all seemingly good in the academic and the abstract, but it seems to me that part of the problem, which is structural in our Constitution, is you've got a majority of the population concentrated in certain areas, but the Senate doesn't have that as its governing rationale, and the Jeffersonian rules, which are still in effect, permit all this type of obstruction. It seems to me that the Democrats have become the big tent. Olympia Snowe, who is a moderate Republican, is in effect no longer welcome in her own party. There are no Nelson Rockefeller Republicans anymore. And therefore, the Big Ten is the Democrats. So what does that mean? It means that, it strikes me, the Democrats, not the Republicans, have to be more aggressive politically. They have to go after purple districts. They have to attack gerrymandering. These are all political solutions, which is about the Democratic Party, in order to get the country back to, in effect, majority rule and sensible rule in the center.
Robert, thank you for your call. Senator, what do you think about that? You know, we have a number of people who want to say that the problem is not both parties. The problem is the Republican Party. And that if you look at the drift of the party, now I'm putting words in people's mouths, but, you know, I've heard this a million times. So if you look at the drift over time from Nixon's domestic policies to the more conservative Reagan's, then to the more hardcore Gingrich House era and Falwell religious right era, now to the Tea Party and Grover Norquist and NRA never compromise era, all while the Democrats have become more centrist, the Bill Clinton era over the McGovern days and all of that, that the polarization is mostly on one side. How much do you agree with that?
Well, I don't think that's necessarily true. It's certainly true that the Republican Party is fundamentally going through, dramatic change without question, that it's, you know, applied a litmus test to the exclusion of a number of Republicans across this country. And that's regrettable and unfortunate. But even when we had, you know, President Reagan in office, there was accommodation of diverse views within the Republican Party. That changed as well over the years when there was no longer any tolerance for a diversity of viewpoints of political philosophies within the Republican Party. But nevertheless, it's the question is the way in which it works in the United States Senate. Again, what you have is you do have filibusters, and that's threatened on our side when they don't have the ability to amend legislation when it comes to the floor of the United States Senate. So the majority forecloses the possibility of amendments. That has dramatically changed as well in the Senate, where you don't have the possibility of building, you know, consensus and creating a bridge by which you can modify legislation that can bring both sides together. The unfortunate downside to this polarization is the loss of moderate and centrists on both sides of the political aisle. And that has been true in the United States Senate, particularly in the last three elections. So, yes, the Republican Party is fundamentally going through a realignment. They're going to have to go through a series of introspective efforts in order to change the direction of the party if they ever want to be a governing majority. But nevertheless, there are problems on both sides overall. And certainly that's been my experience in the United States Senate.
Joseph in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Olympia Snowe. Hello.
Yes, I'm in my mid-30s, and I'm very disillusioned with politics. And I think the biggest problem is threefold, is money in politics, a la Citizens United. The Senate, I'm not sure why we even have disproportionate representation, 71 if you compare California to Wyoming, and filibuster reform and gerrymandering, actually. But I want to talk about filibuster reform. Why, if there's unprecedented filibusters, why is, I call him weak-kneed Reed, doing nothing about it? Zero.
What about the filibuster reform? This was the first one on your list, at least in the way it was listed
right
in the book.
Well, you know, they reached a, you know, Majority Leader and Reid and Minority Leader McConnell reached a, you know, a temporary agreement that would apply to this Congress only on the question of, you know, having any filibusters on the motion to proceed, which is to begin to move to debate on a particular question, not on the question itself, and to avert, you know, what could have been a crisis in the Senate if the Senator Reid had decided to replace the filibuster with a 60 vote and have it require only a majority vote. Back in 2005, when we had a Republican majority leader, he proposed the same, and a group of us called the Gang of 14 said, you know, that's going to just have longstanding reverberating effects in the United States Senate when you start to alter their traditions and practices of the Senate. So we came up with an agreement that actually allowed and paved the way for Bush's nominations to go through. And it would have created a crisis this time as well. So it's good that they reached an agreement. The question is whether or not, you know, it can hold for the long term. And also, just limiting amendments really does, you know, prohibit the voices of all senators to be expressed on the floor of the Senate. So they allow four amendments, two on each side, if the minority agrees not to filibuster the motion to proceed. I hope that just doesn't become a ceiling. I think the point of all of this is it's about human behavior. And it's about doing the job, and the, you know, as an elected official, which is to focus on the issues that matter to your constituency and to the country, and to get the job done. It's problem solving. That's what it's all about. And so, you know, when there's abuse of the practices, it's about behavior as opposed to actually the rules themselves. But frankly, you know, if it doesn't work this year, then one of the issues to consider is, frankly, is to have live filibusters, require the senator to be on the floor doing what Senator Rand Paul did recently, and, you know, have to conduct the filibuster personally on the floor rather than, you know, sort of anonymously. And then the Senate just goes on to, you know, conduct other business. But the point of it is that something has to change in order to make the system work. The Senate is a deliberative body. It's supposed to focus on issues. And now it's become more of a parliamentary system where each side gets locked down.
Yeah.
It's one thing to have your political differences and partisan differences. But the question is, when you don't prevail, that you must transcend those differences to achieve results for the country.
We are out of time. I know that a lot of our listeners really appreciate you fighting this fight. Whether or not they agree on every proposal and every issue that you've ever voted on, I think a lot of people are really appreciating that somebody as prominent as you is out there making the argument for these kinds of reforms and for the need to do something structural to get past this pretty terrible moment in our national politics. So, former Senator Olympia Snowe, now the author of Fighting for Common Ground, How We Can Fix the Stalemate in Congress. Thank you so much for giving us so much time today.
Brian, thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come. Stay with us.